Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Carrie Pierce. Carrie is the sales production manager for Provident Loans, and he's been in the business since 1985. He's closed about 2,500 loans himself, but he's also supervised about $1.5 billion in closing. So, Carrie, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
One of the things that I look forward to every week is you send me your weekly Inside Lending newsletter, and I appreciate that. And that's it says volume 11. Does that mean it's been around for over a decade?
Been around quite a while. We subscribe to a service that does that for us.
Oh, okay.
And the main reason that we put it out is to give the agents insight as to what's affecting interest rates on a weekly basis.
Okay. One of the things they mentioned was mortgage principal reductions or cancellation by lender not going to be treated as ordinary income. That's a big deal.
Yeah, that's huge.
If that hadn't been renewed, because it was in place for all of 2012 and maybe before that, but it actually came to an end December 31st. If that hadn't been renewed, that could have been a real problem because most of the stuff going on is short sales.
Yeah. I mean, what would you guess percentage of the market is short sales? 60, 70% maybe?
You know, it's on a chart, if you look at it, it's actually 25 and you've got 30% cash. But, you know, and I would agree with you, it sure seems like it's the dominant player and it's certainly overtaking REOs.
Yeah.
So it's replacing REOs and then its own little pack of inventory. That's a good question, Carrie, because I think in 2013, if we have price increases, the normal seller will start emerging with equity, and maybe less and less short sales will be necessary. But that's still going to be the dominant theme for most of the year, I think, those two.
We would love to see it get back to a normal market where we have regular sellers out there.
Well, you know, one of the problems is that you've still got, let's say, 40% of California, or certainly Riverside and San Bernardino County, upside down. So they can't be a participant yet, even if they don't want to be a short sale, which a lot of them don't. Then
right.
They're a non-participant until they have equity. And that's, I guess that really gets to the inventory problem, is that, okay, what are you going to buy?
Yeah.
And so that is one of the issues for Riverside and San Bernardino. Actually, every county has the same chart. Gone from 7 months to 1.5 months supply of inventory.
Wow.
And so there was an article over the weekend where we had talked about thinking, well, said it in writing, 20% price increase for California this year. And I don't see how it doesn't happen if you only have a month and a half supply and you have the kind of demand that I feel like we do.
Correct.
So,
well, you and I talked about that at lunch, you know, where so many buyers are getting outbid, a lot of cash buyers, and they're upping, going over list price. So it's just going to feed on itself.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things in the newsletter too was the unemployment level, and in California, I don't think you solve that until you have construction.
Yeah,
and I think this is sort of if it's a part of a master plan, it's actually pretty brilliant. It probably isn't, but it's going to happen anyway. I think you're going to have prices accelerate until construction pencils.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden you go, okay, well then it's game over. We know how the dominoes fall after all that happens,
right?
But getting the prices beyond cost replacement is really been the challenge. Go ahead.
I was just going to say we've seen so many cycles like this already, you know, and it's bound to start going the other way.
Yeah, this one has really just, of course, been the worst one, where we got most of the real estate in Riverside and San Bernardino upside down. And, you know, well, subdivision creation is down 95% over the last 5 years. So the builders still can't look at a piece of dirt and say, hey, I'll carve it up and build something on it. It still doesn't work.
Yeah.
So you still need some pretty hefty price increases. You know, you deal with a lot of people getting maybe even their first loan. Do they have any appreciation at these rates being so low? Do they
appreciation?
Get it? No, the current rates of interest. Do they have any appreciation how cool it is to be able to get something at 3%?
Oh God, I know, it's ridiculous. You know, people when they see the rates spike up like they have over the last week from 3.25 to 3.5, and everybody panics. 3.5 is still great interest rate.
Well, I mean, never in our life, never in anybody's life, That's actually some of the research that we've done. We know that no one alive has seen the interest rates we have. So it's crazy. But that's human nature to go, oh, wow, 3.5. Yeah, that's been.
Yeah, where's that 3.25? I want that 3.25.
Yeah, that's funny. But going back to, you know, when you were first in the business, that was mid-80s. That was what interest rate prevalent, about 12?
It had just come down to 12.5 when I started.
Okay. I remember becoming an investor full-time in 1981, perfect timing, refinancing a house at 17.5% fixed.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, you start looking at a rate. As you know, one of the reasons we're talking today is I did some refis as a rental property because it was just ridiculous. The interest rate was under 4% for non-owner occupant, and I just thought, I guess I don't want to walk away from this era without borrowing some money.
Right. Well, you can go out and invest in more properties.
Yeah. Since I expect this inflation to kick off, I just did that. One of the things in the newsletter, too, it talks about pretty small GDP growth expected, 1% annual growth. And what in your experience does that number have on an effect on interest rates going forward, do you think?
Ah, that's a tough one. Obviously, we've got to have growth to, get the unemployment number down. And until that happens, I mean, they're saying we could have rates this low for 2, maybe 3 more years.
Yeah. See, what's interesting about that, when we talk about GDP, that's a national situation. You could have a very different real estate market in California because of those interest rates. And you still could have those interest rates. Even if we started flying in price, if the GDP growth of the nation still gets really small, we'll start enjoying, the heck out of a nice bull run in price, but interest rates won't change because the national picture hasn't changed.
Yeah, the affordability is still going to be, very good for most. And, until that unemployment number comes down, that seems to be the magic thing that everybody's looking at.
Yeah. When you were in the business, let's say 85 to 89, I mean, that was really one heck of a price run. And I don't know if one of the things when you just get into the business, you don't have any reference point to point to.
Well, luckily for me, I bought my first house in 86, and it was about a 1,500 square foot house, paid $104,000 for it. And we sold it in 89 for $175,000.
Okay. So that was, about a lot of increase, 65, 70%.
Yeah.
Do you recall the lending programs as they progressed, let's say from 85 to 89? Do you feel that they were assisting the price increase? Did they get more generous, get more lax, that type of thing?
Not really more lax, because the stated income loans and those type of programs hadn't really yet been created. But back then, there was the graduated payment mortgage, which allowed the buyer to come in for a lower payment to start, and then obviously it graduated up. But those loans had potential negative equity, and that was a small problem. But at the time, since we had appreciation, it wasn't really a big issue.
Well,
the other loan that was out there, too, was the buy-down, and that was a really popular program back then.
Okay, buy-down was you just paid points and got a lower fixed?
It was usually what most people did, they called it a temporary buy-down, where they would buy it down 3% the first year, 2% the second, and then the third year, 1%, and then it would go to the note rate the fourth year.
And you were qualifying at the initial?
At the initial, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, then it did assist in somewhat. I don't know how prevalent those were, but I imagine those were popular with builders.
Yeah. We did a lot of them back then.
Okay. So that's the history. Usually when we have a price boom, what happens is I think you end up with fewer and fewer defaults that cause losses, even if you have defaults. It'd be hard to have a default cost anybody anything in 1988.
Right.
So everybody thinks, well, this loan program is perfectly safe. The problem with, this last time is that I would imagine loan programs probably even shocked someone like you, who had been in the business then probably almost 15, 20 years. Did any of those loan programs come across your desk and you go, you got to be kidding me?
Well, the stated income loan actually was a high-performing loan when it first came out because it required 20 to 25% down.
Okay.
And even though, you're giving them to self-employed borrowers who didn't always show a high enough, net income, it was designed for that borrower because they had a great credit history and they had the large down payment, and obviously you had a decent equity position in the property at the time of the sale. So, but when they started, doing zero down stated income loans, and then on top of that, adding in the negative AM arm, where, you had that low 1.5 or 2% payment, but it wasn't amortized. You know, those are the types of loans that really created a problem.
Yeah, when you looked at those programs being enacted, I mean, even I don't know if your company was doing them, but you were competing against companies that were doing them.
Yes, and I mean, I advise my clients against those loans. Yeah. I only had one client beg me to do it, and you know, we went ahead and did a refi on it. But anybody coming in as a purchase, we shied them away from those. We just knew it wasn't a good loan.
Yeah, time bomb, and at the price point that they were at, probably per month. I mean, that's the other thing, is that qualifying just seemed to kind of go out the window, because the way they were marketing the paper certainly had changed from normal.
Well, yeah, when you tell somebody they can get a million-dollar mortgage and have a payment of, you know, $1,200, $1,500, who wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah, those were the good old days. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
How different now is lending than from the heyday, let's say, and whatever that was? What would be the heyday of lending where you just go, okay, well, this is just ridiculous? Was it 06 or 07?
You know, 03 to 06 was pretty lax.
Okay.
There was all the stated income loans, the Alt-A, they called it, where they did all kinds of crazy stuff, no ratio, no doc, all of that. The 80-20 loan really was a popular program, and even on the subprime level, the 80-20s, you know, there was a ton of volume going down on that. But now everything has gone back to when I first started. Everything's full doc. There are no stated income loans. At least we don't offer them. And so, you know, the quality is there in the loan package, because they've got to meet the ratios, they've got to have the credit, and obviously they have to have the down payment.
Sitting at your desk, do you think we've overshot on the conservative side?
A little bit. I do think so. I mean, I think there should still be a stated income loan with a 20 to 25% down payment, because that fits a very niche part of the market.
Yeah, and the skin in the game would seem to be a sufficient yeah, that's equal to a Fannie Mae 20% down as far as spread.
Right.
Okay.
So we're definitely missing that.
Yeah. Give me an example of a recent loan that you just looked at and went, this is perfectly safe, but there's no way it's going to get approved.
We've got some situations on FHA where we run a client through the automated system and it'll spit out an approval, and some cases it might be really close to a 60% debt ratio, but Provident won't touch that loan over 55% debt ratio.
Okay.
So even though we have an automated approval that says they'll take it, we won't, because we have our own internal guidelines that limit us.
Okay, that's an interesting topic. That's called an overlay, right?
An overlay, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So FHA, it's one of the interesting overlays is the time lag between someone having lost a property and FHA's. I've interviewed FHA on the radio show, and I asked them this question. Okay, how long after a foreclosure will you make a loan to somebody? You know what their answer was directly?
Well, it should be 3 years, but what did they tell you?
6 months.
6 months?
6 months. That came from FHA directly. So that's kind of what I was asking, is an overlay in time 3 years, is that lender-induced? Because it doesn't seem to be FHA-induced.
It's right in their guidelines. It's in the 4155.
That it's 3 year.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then that's changed, or she didn't know it.
Yeah, she obviously didn't know it.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, conventionally, they'll actually consider you after 2 years on a short sale if you're putting 20% down. And they say on a foreclosure, they'll consider it after 3 years with 10% down, but the normal rule is 7 years on a foreclosure on Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac.
Right. Okay. If we're selling a property as an investor and we're taking a look at somebody's application, I'm going to just go down some of the criteria that probably are real important and see which ones matter, you know, a lot. FICO score?
Definitely critical.
Okay. Now, used to be FHA was really doing a lot of business with under 619. I remember the chart. There was something like 40% of their business in 07 was 40% was under 619 FICO score, and now it's 3%. So,
well, yeah, FHA never actually had a minimum FICO score until the last maybe 4 years. And there's still some lenders out there that'll go down to 580 on an FHA loan. In Provident, we have the investor overlays that require 620, and some lenders are as high as 640. But there are programs out there where a client can have no credit and do non-traditional, where they get 12 months verification of rent, 12 months on a utility bill, and then maybe a phone bill. And with those three items, they can actually get an FHA loan. Unfortunately, at Provident, our investor overlays don't allow it, so we have to have at least a 620 middle score.
You know, all the stuff you just said is interesting. If you could be, you could have been in the business, let's say, from 2003 to 2008 and literally have no idea what you just said because they never did an FHA loan.
Right. Yeah. FHA, I started out, and that was, you know, probably 80% of the production that I did in the early or the mid 80s to early 90s. And then in probably 2001, when the 80-20s became really popular and the appreciation ran up so much, FHA was out of business because their loan limit was too low, for one. And then two, when people could get in for zero down and not have any mortgage insurance, it was a huge attraction. And the rates were still very attractive.
Loan limits, that's very interesting. We're at a $340,000 or $350,000 median price right now. What's the loan limit for FHA?
They've extended it to the $500,000 again for 2013, which it's over their normal limit, which is somewhere around the 340, 350 range. But it was extended back when they did all that legislation in 07, you know, passed the various bills that they did to help housing. But Riverside got extended for $500,000 again for this year.
Do you know what the FHA loan limit was the first time we reached 340, going up from the 90s? Is 160 grand.
Wow.
Yeah. So even the 340 to 350 is equal to the state median, is way higher than the ratio it used to be. It used to be half of median.
Yeah.
And so how important do you think the FHA program is to the current market being okay?
Oh, huge.
Yeah, huge.
We can't live without it.
Well, especially people that have lost properties over the last, you know, let's say 3 to 5 years out. That's got to be the loan, predominantly.
Yeah, I heard a statistic. I don't know how accurate it is, but that, you know, around 05, 06, FHA's business had dropped to around 4% of the overall volume in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And today, I think it's over 60%.
Yeah, that would make sense to me. And that's one announcement I don't want to hear. FHA's going back to the other limits. That would be a problem.
Well, they keep raising their monthly mortgage insurance, and they've raised the one-time MIP. They keep trying to say that they're hurting for money, and they've got to, you know, increase the revenue. But we're scratching our heads thinking, all this volume they're doing, they're great loans. People are well qualified. How are they losing money? We don't get it.
Well, they're losing money because of what they did after, just right after the crash, when they started getting popular. They got popular a little too early. So they were doing big loan, you know, big amount of loans in 08 and 09, and those had still negative equity run. So, but after that, I think they're going to look back at 2011, 2012 as the safest years ever to make a loan.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that's going to come full circle to where they go, okay, I mean, gee, many Christmas, we don't have a foreclosure. So maybe we can cut loose a little bit and get some more people involved. And I that seems to be typical to me that'll happen somewhere along the line. I think what's unusual this time is that the government backed, you know, whether it's FHA or if it's Fannie or Freddie. I mean, what percentage of the mortgage market is under those hats?
A ton. It's got to be 80, 90%.
Yeah. And that's, you wonder. I was being interviewed just on LA Times, and they had it was sort of like a panel, and one of the guys was talking about the lenders programs and all of that and the intervention. And I asked him, I said, let me ask you a question. Is there anything that concerns you about a lender looking at the changes that's been forced on them after the fact and saying, you know what, we're going to be really careful about making the next loan? So do you think any of these things that they've done where you can't foreclose, you have to do this, you have to do that, have ramifications for the future where the lenders just go, we're really going to be careful?
You know, the market that's gotten hit the hardest in relation to that, I think, is the jumbo market, because
right.
It's been so slow to come back. They have been so cautious. You know, for 09 and 10, I think, you know, jumbo almost didn't exist, and that's where the higher Fannie Mae loan limits came in to help out the market. But finally, the jumbo investors started coming back in slowly, and today we actually do have a 20% down jumbo loan available, which we hadn't had for a while. So, but they're still very restrictive on debt ratios. They want the cream of the crop credit scores, and they want a ton of reserves, which you never had to have before.
Mm-hmm.
In loans today on a jumbo, they want 12 months reserves on a lot of these loans, and in the past you only had to have two.
Yeah, you know, if you're going to borrow $100 or $1 million, maybe that's not unreasonable.
No, yeah, it's not such. I mean, I think 12 is excessive, though. I think they kind of went overboard on some of the guidelines, but you know, hopefully we'll see that relax a little bit, you know, as the jumbo investor comes back.
Yeah. Every time they do a jumbo loan, is that a foregone conclusion that's a portfolio loan?
No, we sell everything we do, and most of the other lenders out there do too. I mean, maybe not the big banks like B of A or Wells, but we sell everything. So we have to find that investor who's willing to take it, and maybe that causes us to be a little more selective, or you know, not quite as liberal. But that's the market.
And that is that bought by a mortgage-backed security?
Well, we're selling loans to B of A, oddly enough, Wells, Chase, you know, so we sell it to all the big boys.
Okay.
And, you know, there are some private groups out there on the jumbo side, Redwood and Citibank, I believe, and a few others. But, you know, they make the rules. So.
Okay. Now, one of the concerns for any lender is a buyback. So kind of explain to me what a buyback is. Somebody writes a loan and I don't know.
Well, yeah, if the client doesn't make the payment, obviously they go through the notice of default and foreclosure. And then, well, that's a little bit different than a buyback. A buyback is where if we misrepresent that package to the lender in some way or made an error, then they force us to take it back versus them dealing with the whole foreclosure process.
Does it even have to be late for that to happen?
Not necessarily. I mean, there can be other problems in the file, you know, ratios that you miscalculated or whatever. I mean, it can be the minutest of things, and they can kick that loan right back to you. We've even had it happen on FHA loans, where FHA wouldn't insure loans that we funded, even though we underwrote them to their guidelines. They found one little problem and said, we're not buying that loan.
Okay. So hence the scrutiny over and over again for the files.
Right.
Okay. And when you buy them back, I mean, then it's a portfolio loan and that's it?
Yeah, or we have to sell it in what they call the scratch and dent.
Exactly.
So and that, you take about a 15% haircut.
On principle.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we've had that happen to our branch, and it's not been fun.
Okay. But I'm sure not very often, but it's interesting.
Not very often, no. But, I mean, when something like that happens, obviously our branch gets hit for it, so it affects our P&L.
How about debt ratios? What's common for, you know, like the front end and back end?
In the old days, you know, if you look in the FHA 4155, their rules are 29% housing ratio, 41% debt ratio. And when I first started in lending, we had to really push to get a 43 debt ratio approved.
Okay.
You had to have two compensating factors, you know, excess money in the bank, their housing's not going up much, very little debt. You know, on and on and on. They have various examples, but you had to have at least two compensating factors just to get to the 43 debt ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the automated underwriting kicked in, they really loosened up quite a bit. And today we're seeing loans get approved at 55-56% on an FHA.
And the back end consists of any other payment that's monthly that's going to last for what, a year?
Well, on FHA, it's everything on the credit report. And their rule's a little tougher because you could have a guy who has a car payment that's $100 a month that has 6 or 7 months left. They're still going to count it.
Still going to count it.
Because they view that as, you know, a large payment. You and I don't look at it that way, but they view it as a large payment, so they're still going to count it.
Okay, just got a minute left on this section of it. Say a guy gets a $1,000 a month raise and it nets him $750 more a month. Then he can utilize under FHA, under pretty aggressive guidelines, that could bump his payment capability up something like $375.
Probably,
no.
Yeah.
Okay, now,
yeah.
Do they change the front end as generously?
Actually, there are some limits on the front end, so you do have to be careful. About the highest we see get approved on the front end is 46.
Oh.
And that's when somebody has virtually no debt.
Okay, well that's...
So 46 over 47, you know, might fly, but a 46 over 56 probably won't.
Okay, so it's kind of one or the other?
Right.
Okay, so if somebody owns free and clear cars and all that, he's going to get the chance to be the 40, mid-40s on just the real estate debt.
Correct.
All right, Kerry, we ran out of time here. Let me give your contact number. Okay, to give you the direct number?
Absolutely.
Okay, Kerry's phone number direct is 951-256-3715. Known Kerry for a long time. Kerry, thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Bruce.
You bet.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.